This is VOA News. I'm Steve Norman. Syrian state media reporting an Israeli airstrike hit a military post in Hama province, the latest in a series of such attacks in recent weeks. Israel declining comment but has expressed alarm at the presence of Iranian-backed forces in the country. The strike occurred hours after Israeli troops safely evacuated hundreds of so-called White Helmet civil defense rescue workers and their families from Syria. Yaakov Lapin of the Begin Sadat Center for Strategic Studies called it a humanitarian effort.
There was a real concern that these people would be targeted by the Assad regime. I think it's also important to point out there has been a non-interventionist policy. At the same time, approximately 5,000 Syrian civilians have received life-saving care at Israeli medical centers and hospitals since 2013. So there has been a very wide humanitarian effort by Israel, at least along the border area.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said the operation was the result of requests by President Trump and Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. Authorities in Afghanistan say a powerful bomb went off near Kabul's international airport, killing at least 16, wounding 60 others. It occurred just minutes after first Vice President Abdul Rahid Dostum returned from exile. Dostum was not hurt in the incident. Islamic State claimed responsibility for the bombing. Chief of Staff of Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed says the country must pursue multi-party democracy. Currently, the country's ruling Ethiopian People's Revolutionary Democratic Front has held all parliamentary seats since 1991. Prime Minister has announced sweeping reforms since taking office in April, including the release of opposition figures. This is VOA News. Trump administration has launched a campaign aimed at altering Iranian state behavior. A U.S. official insisted it is not aimed at regime change. The campaign kicked off late Sunday with Secretary of State Mike Pompeo delivering a speech titled Supporting Iranian Voices, directed at the Iranian diaspora. Foundation for the Defense of Democracy's analyst Benam Ben Taliblu attended the speech and speaks with VOA about how effective it will be.
Well, I think this will be judged by whether it's a predicate for future action. I don't think a single speech is going to be able to accomplish anything, but hopefully it'll set a key series of things in place. One, greater civic engagement by the Iranian-American community, especially on Iran policy. And two, clear, strong, and direct public diplomacy from the White House to the international community, and specifically to the Iranian people, signaling unified support for the Iranian people and pressure against the regime.
Earlier, Iranian President Hassan Rouhani warned the U.S. against pursuing hostile policies, saying war with Iran would be the mother of all wars. Later, President Trump warned Rouhani never to threaten the United States. Iran was jolted by a series of moderate and light earthquakes on Sunday in a mountainous western region in which officials said 150 people were injured. Quake in November killed 600 in 2003, a quake that has killed 26,000. Two U.S. lawmakers have urged strong sanctions on Russia to discourage any attempt at interference in the November U.S. midterm elections. One of them is Republican Senator Lindsey Graham, who had a message for President Trump.
Harden our electoral infrastructure for 2018. Mr. President, Dan Coats is right. The red lights are blinking. Get your entire government, which is doing a lot of good work, but nobody knows about it. Sit down with Congress and the administration, and you lead this nation to hardening the 2018 election process before it's too late, not just from Russia, but from others.
Senator Marco Rubio, appearing on the CBS program as well, Face the Nation, said the U.S. election will try again. The Russians will try again to affect it. Trade, geopolitical tensions, putting global economic growth at risk. G20 finance ministers meeting in Buenos Aires. IMF chief Christine Lagarde attended the summit and said global debt is also a big threat.
It stands at $164 trillion, which is 225% of GDP, of which the private sector accounts for two-thirds. Public debt in advanced economies is at levels not seen since the Second World War.
The G20 ministers describe the overall world economic growth as robust. I'm Steve Norman, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, July 23rd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Female representation in this year's Zimbabwe election is yet to be on par with the rest of Africa.
So we are saying we want gender equality in Zimbabwe. We've got plenty of able and capable women in this country who can occupy those governance processes in places in our political structures.
Linda Masarira is the national spokesperson for the opposition MDCT, led by Tokozani Kupe. The new U.S. ambassador to Zimbabwe hopes for improved relations between Washington and Harare. An opposition leader in Sierra Leone fears he will be arrested this Monday morning.
There's nothing absolutely in my 1 hour, 30 minute interview that I can pinpoint why the police came to my residence on Sunday to arrest me.
Mohamed Kamal Raimba Massare is the leader of the opposition Alliance Democratic Party of Sierra Leone. But the police said they have a reason why they want to question Mr. Massare this morning. And Kenya and South Korea take yet another step to deepen their bilateral trade ties. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. For one of the four female candidates in this year's Zimbabwe presidential election says the political climate is still hostile to women. Linda Masarira, national spokesperson for the opposition MDCT, led by Tokozani Kupe, says the country is still highly male-controlled, as evidenced by the lowest number of female candidates in the July 30th election. She says Zimbabwe's quota system, put in the 2013 constitution, but set to expire in 2023, must be renewed if the country is to meet the level of female representation gained by other African countries. But Masarira says female presidential candidate Tokozani Kupe has a 50-50 chance of winning the July 30th election because Zimbabweans are now more politically mature.
The campaign is going on well. It is actually positive. Zimbabweans are more enlightened because of the social media presence, where at least information gets out on real time and people have to balance on who their preferred candidate is. It's unlike the previous elections where people were just subjected to state propaganda that was spewed in print media. The MDCT led by Dr. Tokozani Kupe stands for constitutionalism. We understand fully that Zimbabwe is in a constitutional crisis, and we will only be able to resolve the issues that we're facing as a nation when we deal with the constitutional crisis that is at the end.
So what do you say to those who think that your candidate, Ms. Kupe, is making it easier for President Mnangagwa to win because of the split or division that is brought about in the opposition?
It's not about Mnangagwa. It's not about Chamisa. It is about what is right and standing for the truth and nothing but the truth. We have had a tragedy in Zimbabwe where people just vote along political lines without looking at how it will affect their own personal livelihood. Nelson Chamisa violated the constitution of the MDCT and imposed himself as a leader and manipulated the mourning crowd for him to take over power when he was not the legitimate person to take over power after the death of Dr. Morgan Richard Tsvangirai. And now we are saying, if he could not respect the party's constitution at party level, how do we entrust him to respect the national constitution of the country, which has been violated willingly over the years?
I want to talk to you about female candidates in Zimbabwe. In fact, some women in Zimbabwe have complained of a hostile and perhaps prejudiced in the political environment. Talk to me from the perspective of your candidate and women in general. How is it for women there in Zimbabwe?
Zimbabwe is still very highly patriarchal. We are suffering from patriarchal dominance. The levels of misogyny in political parties and in the society as a whole is very sickening. And it's sad that in 2018 harmonized elections, we actually have the lowest number of women candidates participating for MP. And for the women's struggle, that has been retrogressive, because we've been fighting for gender equality over the years. We even had a quota system put into the Constitution of Zimbabwe, which is ending this year, to ensure that we have more women in parliament. So we are saying we want gender equality in Zimbabwe. We've got plenty of able and capable women in this country who can occupy those cabinet processes in places in our political structures.
Linda Masarira is the national spokesperson for the opposition MDCT, led by Togo Zanikupe, one of four female presidential candidates. She was speaking with me from the Zimbabwe capital, Harare. The new U.S. ambassador to Zimbabwe, Brian Nichols, says he's hopeful that years of strained relations between Washington and Harare will improve. As Sebastian Mofu reports from Harare, the U.S. diplomat says he's also optimistic that Zimbabwe's July 30th general election will change the fortunes of the Southern African country's economy.
Ambassador Brian Nichols presented his credentials to Zimbabwe President Emmerson Mnangagwa on Friday and immediately started hitting the ground running by hosting journalists in Harare.
The elections that will take place in a very short amount of time, if they are free and fair and credible, really portend great things. And obviously there are many other reforms that Zimbabwe needs on the economic and rule of law side. But I'm very optimistic that our relationship will grow closer, and I hope that our two countries can work together for the betterment of the people of Zimbabwe and the people of the United States.
Zimbabwe-U.S. relations strained in 2002 when Washington, D.C., together with most Western countries, slapped then-President Robert Mugabe and his ruling ZANU-PF party leadership with travel restrictions and asset freezes in reaction to reports of human rights abuses and election rigging by Zimbabwe state security officials and government. Following the removal of Mr. Mugabe from power last November due to pressure from the military, Zimbabwe's new leader, Emmerson Mnangagwa, has been trying to normalize relations with the West. The U.S. has said Mnangagwa's caretaker administration must ensure that Zimbabwe's July 30th general election is free, fair, credible, and transparent. But the opposition is accusing Mnangagwa's ruling ZANU-PF party and state security officials of manipulating the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission to rig polls, as was the case under the Mugabe regime. This week, Zimbabwe's electoral court is expected to hear an urgent application by the Opposition Movement for Democratic Change Alliance, led by Nelson Chamisa, in which it is seeking an nullification of postal votes of some police officers who voted in front of their seniors. The opposition also wants the court to order a reprint of the presidential ballot paper, which it says was designed by the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission to give an unfair advantage to President Mnangagwa. Sebastian Mofu for VOA's Daybreak Africa, Harare.
Kenya and South Korea took another step this past week to deepen their bilateral trade ties in agriculture, energy, infrastructure, and healthcare. South Korea's Prime Minister Lee Nak-yong, currently on a three-day visit to Kenya, says his country is willing to support the Kenyan government's affordable housing plan. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, Lee made his comments over the weekend during a Kenya-Korea business forum.
Speaking in Nairobi while in a meeting with Kenya's Deputy President William Ruto, the South Korean Prime Minister said that political stability and notable economic growth make Kenya more attractive to economic partners. He says Kenya's growth in information and communication technology has got a global competitiveness and is therefore becoming more attractive hub to invest in.
Political stability, geopolitical location, economic growth of 5% and a strong government commitment to industrialization make Kenya a more attractive economic partner.
Kenya is attracting world attention as an IT and venture hub that drives innovation growth in Africa. Korea is also pursuing innovation growth in the field of ICT and is also equipped with international competitiveness. Therefore, based on that, we need to share experiences and enhance cooperation in this field.
On the other hand, Deputy President William Ruto says Kenya and South Korea will focus mostly on the government's big four agendas.
I appreciate that Kenya and South Korea have intensified interaction in the big four sectors, such as agriculture and health. Our two countries are also working together in other areas, such as in trade, through the Kenya-South Korea Joint Economic Commission, and ICT in energy and education sectors.
Deputy President Ruto says vibrant trade is key to reinforcing bilateral relations between the two countries. He also said that trade imbalance will be addressed in favor of South Korea as a way of enhancing importation of key products traded in international markets.
That is why it is important to address the much skewed trade imbalance that is in favor of Korea. Kenya, Your Excellency, wishes to introduce a variety of exports to Korea, and this include cut flowers, coffee, black tea, and fresh produce, such as mangoes, avocados, pineapples, among others, which are world-class products.
Mr. Lee Nakyong also met President Uhuru Kenyatta in a closed-door meeting at the State House in Nairobi before witnessing the signing of several agreements with various business organizations, among them Sosian Energy Power and Chandaria Industries. Kenya has been holding several bilateral talks with different countries recently as part of an effort towards achieving the government's Big Four agendas. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today's Monday, July 23rd. Daybreak Africa time is 16 and a half minutes past the hour. Chinese President Xi Jinping has arrived in Rwanda today, Monday, the second stop of his latest Africa tour. Mr. Ping concluded a two-day state visit to Senegal on Sunday, where he and Senegalese President Macky Sall signed several bilateral deals to boost their economic ties. Jacques Aristide of VOA's French 2 Africa service reports from Dakar.
Xi Jinping concluded his Senegalese stopover in the Dakar suburb of Pekin. The Chinese president symbolically handed the keys of the national sports arena to President Macky Sall. This is sports infrastructure, which can accommodate up to 25,000 spectators, is dedicated to Senegalese wrestling, a very popular traditional fight in the country. This architectural jewel, as depicted by the sports minister Matar Ba, was built in record time at a cost of 32 billion CFA francs, about $58 million, one of the projects enhancing cooperation between Dakar and Beijing. In a speech Saturday, after his meeting with his Chinese counterpart at the presidential palace in Dakar, President Sall said there are more than 40 projects currently being financed by China. Since the re-establishment of our diplomatic relations in 2005, the financing granted by China to Senegal amounts to more than 1,206 billion CFA francs, or more than 14 billion yuan, 963 billion CFA francs, were mobilized between 2012 and 2018. This represents more than 80% of this funding, he says. The accords signed Saturday relate to areas such as justice, infrastructure, and civil aviation. Xi Jinping said he was in favor of a strong evolution of the partnership between the two countries in the fields of infrastructure and investment, as well as those valuing human capital. He also said he wants to strengthen cultural exchanges and invest more in the fight against what he calls the effects of climate change. Amnesty International Senegal has called on President Macky Sall not to ignore the issue of respect for human rights during his Chinese counterpart's visit. The Chinese president left Senegal Sunday, Johannesburg, the second leg of his Africa tour. Here, he will take part in the BRICS summit that includes Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. A stopover in Mauritius is also planned. Jacques Aristide, VOA News, Dakar, Senegal.
In Sierra Leone, the leader of the opposition Alliance Democratic Party says he fears the police will arrest him this Monday morning because of what the police think he said about the government during a radio interview last Friday. Mohamed Kamaraimba Masare called VOA on Sunday to say he had been summoned to report this Monday morning to the headquarters of the Criminal Investigation Department of the Sierra Leone National Police. It is believed Mr. Massare said during his radio interview that the government was planning on confiscating the diplomatic passport of former President Ernest Bai Koroma. Massare denies the allegations and tells me the police summer is a threat to freedom of expression in Sierra Leone.
To be honest with you, there's nothing absolutely in my 1 hour, 30-minute interview that I can pinpoint why the police came to my residence on Sunday to arrest me. Virtually, I was called by Radio Democracy 98.1 and African Young Voice TV. I went there and we discussed the first 100 days of President Julius Maada Bio's in office. I gave him kudos of certain things and spoke about the economic hardship that's going on, the inflation of the U.S. dollar to the Leone, the cost of living is so soaring. And those are the things that I spoke about. So I'm really surprised when I saw the Assistant Inspector General of Police and they came to my residence to arrest me for my statement on those two radio and television stations.
Mr. Massare, in your radio interview, did you claim that the Sierra Leone government has confiscated the diplomatic passport of former President Ernest Bai Koroma?
Absolutely no. In fact, the former president is out of the country, I'm aware, so he has his documents with him. How would I state that the government has taken away the former president's travel document while the president is out of the country? No, I said that there was a report that I saw, an executive order, that the president and the ministers that serve under him must surrender their passport to the police. I said, based on that, I'm urging the president not to take the passport of the former president.
So you say in your social media posting that Sierra Leone democracy is under threat. So you are calling on Sierra Leoneans to join you when you go to the police headquarters this morning. What evidence do you have that democracy in Sierra Leone or freedom of expression is under threat?
It's clear. The media houses called me to come and talk about the 100 days in office. This was my first interview to the nation, form of opposition to this ruling government. So this is why you can see how our democracy is under threat.
Mohamed Kamaraim Massare is leader of the opposition, leader of the Opposition Alliance Democratic Party of Sierra Leone. He was speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. Sierra Leone police are denying that they plan to arrest Mr. Massare of the Opposition Alliance Democratic Party this Monday morning. Superintendent Brian Maja of the Police Criminal Division says the police simply want to question Mr. Massare about remarks he made about the government and President Julius Maada Bio during a radio interview.
Under the Public Order Act of 1965, Section 32, subsection 2, it is clearly stated there that any individual who publishes any statement, rumor, or report which is calculated to bring in disrepute any person who holds an office under the Constitution, or actually to bring disorder within the country, commits an offense. And clearly, the interview provided by Mr. Kambarimba Massare to both the AYV and the 98.1 Radio Democracy totally rests on those areas.
What did he say exactly?
He said a lot of things, actually, that will create chaos in this country. As you know, this is a fragile democracy. And so if Mr. Kambarimba is not aware of certain things, it is his place to cross-check with the police. For instance, he said His Excellency has instructed that the passport of the former president be withdrawn. On the contrary, though the GTT, I mean the Governance Transition Team report, made suggestion for certain people, including the former Haiti, to have his passport surrendered, but it was His Excellency who personally told the Inspector General that actually they should not include the former president. That shows regard to his office he held, and he's still holding him to high esteem. And for Mr. Kambarimba to suggest that HE has instructed such a thing to happen is actually a false rumor. And he criticized even appointments And a lot of recent actions the current government has done that will bring disorder within the country. And so,
now, Superintendent Brian Maja of the Sierra Leone Police Criminal Division, he was speaking with me from the capital of Freetown. It's 25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. And it's good to have you back from your vacation. We begin with African football, as the Confederation of African Football is conducting a two-day symposium in Morocco meant to review the 2018 World Cup after all five of the continent's sides failed to get over the first hurdle at the 2018 World Cup in Russia. Egypt, Morocco, Tunisia, Nigeria, and Senegal were all eliminated in the group phase in Russia, leaving Africa without a representative in the knockout rounds for the first time since the 1982 finals in Spain. Coaches and officials of the five countries will discuss the disappointing results at a debrief in Rabat, organized by the Confederation of African Football and the Moroccan Football Federation on Sunday and Monday. Portuguese football manager Carlos Queiroz, who is currently in charge of the Iran men's national football team, has declined an offer by the Egyptian Football Association to take charge of the Egypt national football team, the Pharaohs. According to a report, the 65-year-old has stated that he greatly respects the Pharaohs, yet has no plan to take charge of any African team at the moment. Argentine football manager Hector Cooper recently parted company with the Egypt national football team after the Pharaohs miserably failed to earn a point in the 2018 FIFA World Cup group stage. Nigeria under-20 football team has qualified for the 2019 Africa under-20 Cup of Nations with an emphatic 5-0 win over Mauritania under-20, qualifying on a 6-1 goal aggregate. A breeze from Nazifi Yahaya, including goals from Wasiu Alade, Okun Asukwo, and Aremu Afiz, ensured that the Flying Eagles returned to the tournament after missing out of a chance to defend their title in the 2017 edition staged in Zambia. Elsewhere in Egypt, Egyptian football giant Zamalek will try to get Nigerian player Maruf Yusuf Egyptian citizenship to allow him to stay with the team, as they have reached the maximum number of foreign players allowed in their squad, which is capped at 4. According to a statement on the club's website on Sunday, Zamalek chairman Murtada Mansour is examining the possibility of starting procedures for Egyptian nationality in Yusuf's case. The Spanish Super Cup will be held outside Spain for the first time this year, after the RFEF confirmed plans to stage the match in Tangier in Morocco. La Liga and Copa del Rey champions Barcelona will take on Sevilla, the cup runners-up, in the traditional curtain raiser for the season. In basketball news, FIBA Africa has confirmed the host cities for the first leg of Groups E and F of the FIBA Basketball World Cup 2019 African qualifiers. Both Nigeria and Tunisia will be home to the fourth window of the African qualifiers from September the 14th to the 16th. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that is it for this Monday, July 23rd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer John Ellison, I'm James Barton, Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very, very productive week.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.